today on Vox Talks Economics, the price of deforestation. Welcome to another episode of Vox Talks Economics, recorded at the Climate Change and Environment Conference in Paris, jointly organised by the AXA Research Fund and CEPR. My name is Tim Phillips. We are familiar with frightening images of deforestation, and you've heard the warnings of the impact on nature if we do not do a better job of protecting our tropical rainforests. But how can we quantify the gains from reversing this deforestation? And at what carbon price is reforestation economically rational? José Schenkman of Columbia University is one of a team of economists who have been estimating answers to these questions for the Brazilian Amazon. When I caught up with him at the conference, I began by asking him what we mean when we talk about a tropical rainforest and what the contribution of these rainforests is to the regulation of the global climate.
The tropical forests, scientists define them by a few characteristics. One of the characteristics, they're in the tropics. The other, typically, they have an enclosed canopy. You know, if you fly over a tropical forest, you often don't see anything but the top of the trees.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean there are rivers and things where you can see stuff, but they typically have an enclosed canopy. They have a lot of, they're in very rainy regions, so sometimes they call them rainforests.
Mm-hmm.
And then they are all very diverse and contain a lot of trees. dense trees, you know, that's why you have these enclosed canopies.
Mm-hmm. And it's the trees that have these environmental benefits.
Well, the trees have two aspects. They're a threat and a good thing. Tropical forests have a lot of roles in the weather system. They regulate rain regimes in certain areas, but they also have global consequences. The very large ones like the Amazon are conjectured to be a tipping point. They have a lot of carbon capture, and if you're deforested, you would cause enormous increase in CO2 in the atmosphere. So the Amazon has as much carbon in its trees as all the emissions of the U.S. historically. So you're talking about numbers like that.
And at this conference, we've also been talking a little bit about nature and biodiversity. The Amazon and the tropical forest, they are a huge benefit to biodiversity.
Just the Amazon forest is something like 10% of the biodiversity among trees and vertebrates. One thing about biodiversity we should know is that just counting the number of species is not always the right thing. So it's calculated in the Amazon you have 15,000 species. But if you count the species that are most abundant, you can make up 50% of all the trees out of 2% of the species.
Right.
There are 300 species that fill half the Amazon. And if you really have even a stricter sense of what's an abundant species, you go to something like 1%.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the others are rare.
Now, you've studied the Brazilian Amazon, specifically deforestation in the Brazilian Amazon. How much deforestation has happened there?
The Brazilian Amazon, which, by the way, is 60% of the Amazon, so it's a huge chunk of the Amazon, has lost 15% of its trees. And that's a very large number, if you think of it.
Yeah, who's cutting these trees down? Why are they cutting the trees down?
The people cutting the trees down are basically replacing it by low productivity cattle production. The reason they do it is because a lot of it is done in public lands, so they don't have to buy the land to deforest. But the reforestation has been historically tolerated and even encouraged by governments. So deforestation really starts going during the military government. The military had a paranoia that if the Amazon was empty, the Americans would take it over. They incentivized people. They gave people grants of land and told them, look, you go there, you get a grant of land, but you have to deforest to hold it. If you don't have some economic activity in part of the region, and deforest part of your property, you lose it.
Wow, compulsory deforestation.
Exactly.
Because this has been going on for such a long time and so much of the Brazilian Amazon tropical forest has been eaten up. Does this mean that the government doesn't care about climate, that Brazilian society doesn't care about climate?
Well, if you try to think about and use a model to understand how much Brazilians value the Amazon, you get to a pretty low number, like $7 a ton of carbon.
Yeah.
Now you compare that with the price that you traded ETS for, something like 100 euros a ton. Mm-hmm. That's just an implicit price, you know, there's no market for that. But that's what you have to conclude that they do. And that includes forest services, the production of things like nuts, acai, wild cacao. So historic has been low. Now, of course, has varied forms. I believe the last government, the Bolsonaro government, actually attributed a negative price. They thought we should burn the Amazon and the country would be better off, like the military did in the past. And the other governments which are more sympathetic to the idea that the Amazon is a resource and not something that has to be replaced.
So what are you doing with this work? Are you trying to make policy with this work, or is it to try to quantify what the problem is, to raise awareness of what the problem is?
I am both quantifying but also trying to influence policy. And I think you can only influence policy if you have a credible quantification. You have to show the politicians how much is worth for Brazil reforesting the Amazon. Unless you can make that argument, you're out.
Why not follow Vox Talks and then you won't miss out on two other episodes in this series. Ensuring the World of the Future, in which we discuss how we can become more resilient in the face of more severe natural disasters. And Financing the Green Transition. When we need to double our spending on new technologies, who will pay?
Other people have studied the importance of the Amazon as a carbon sink, and they've tried to quantify some of the things that you're trying to quantify as well. How does your work go further than theirs?
Okay, so first of all, there's a very good moment to mention my co-authors, especially Lars Hansen, my old colleague from the University of Chicago, with whom I've written many, many papers, and one of my newest collaborators, who is Juliano Assunção. Juliano is a climate economist in Brazil, who I think is the most knowledgeable person of climate problems in Brazil by far.
He's
a really fantastic guy. We also, because the problems got mathematically very complicated from the point of view of computation, we had also some help from somebody named Todd Munson. He's a computational scientist at Argonne National Lab, which is one of the big national labs in the United States. Why is our work different? I think there are two things. First of all, we are very explicit about the dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the problem right now for climate is very, very serious at any horizon, but it's particularly serious for the next 15 to 30 years.
Yeah.
That's because one can hope that in that interval, we're going to get enough new technologies, maybe Bill Gates' magic machine who's going to capture carbon from the air.
We must hope.
We must hope. But it's not going to come in soon. You know, we talk to engineers, it's not something we could get super lucky, but we should not depend on the super luck. And so that makes it very important to have a dynamic view. The other is the use of data. There's incredible scientific data now, mostly gotten from the European Space Agency on carbon accumulation in trees all over the world. You know, very detailed data from satellite data, combination of several satellites, in fact. I think we're the first to use it this detail in the Brazilian Amazon. But also the economic data that comes out of the Amazon through the agricultural census. Brazil, with all its problems, it's very good on data.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of data being generated. Of course, we are forced now to use an old agricultural census because among the many good things that Bolsonaro did for the Brazilians, that he stopped the census work. So we wish we had access to a 2022 census was scheduled but never took place.
So you have the satellite data on the trees at a level of detail.
Right.
You have the data on what the farmers are earning.
Yes.
To work out what the economic benefit is to them. When you put all of this together and do your computation, what condition are you looking for to be satisfied so that reforestation becomes rational?
Right. So the first thing I want to make a point is that this model, which I call the military government model of occupying the Amazon for farming, has been a complete disaster. A worker in a farm there makes $200 a month. If farms in other countries were allowed to use the Brazilian credits in their markets, if the price was $25 a ton, that would be enough to make Brazilians much better off. And that's $25 a ton compared to 100 euros a ton in the ETS market. It's very cheap to capture carbon in Brazil. We have like a carbon capture machine, which is very efficient. The alternative cost of the resources is very, very low.
So from your model, as you said, the shadow price is $7.
Yes. Yeah. And then I add $25, you get to a price of $32. I'm saying the shadow price is what Brazilians value, because as I say, there are things like some production done there. I'm not sure that they value at all the carbon. It's by itself, but there's production going on in the Amazon, which does not disturb the forest. Cacao is a plant that has to grow under trees. Açaí comes from the trees in the middle of the forest. Natural rubber comes from the trees. So that all those things can be preserved, the forest can be completely preserved and in turn being used for those products.
But while these numbers are really quite surprising, such low figures to make this feasible, how does this become a policy? What policy can flow from this that would cause reforestation?
Okay, so let me just give you a sense of the size of numbers that we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's not only important to talk about this $25. How much would that bring in terms of carbon capture? So we start with the current situation in Brazil, where, as I said, carbon is being valued at something like $7 a ton, which means that Brazil, unfortunately, will continue deforestation. And in the next 30 years, we'll probably produce another 17 gigatons of carbon. If you were to be paid $25 a ton, you'd get to a number which would be of the order, they will capture 15 gigatons of carbon. So now we're talking about a total change of the order of 32 gigatons.
Mm-hmm.
To give you an idea what 32 gigatons is, if you look at the budget, that may give us a 50% chance of not reaching 1.5 degrees, which, by the way, I think we're going to violate.
Yeah.
Very pessimistic about it. But anyway, that budget right now is between 200 and 300 gigatons.
Mm-hmm.
So you talk of a number which is between 10 and 15% of our current budget mm-hmm. that you could add for the next 30 years. And that's a very large contribution. And even in 15 years, you add 2/3 of that. So you get 20 gigatons net gain from that. Now, it's important to know that Brazil would only be paid, in my calculation, for the carbon it actually captures. The carbon that Brazil stops deforesting would get paid for. So the actual cost of the carbon for society per unit, per ton, is just about $9. Because you're paying $25 for 15, but you're getting $17 extra for free. So that's the way to think about the accounting.
There is another way to think about it. We've mentioned Jair Bolsonaro a couple of times already, but when he was the president of Brazil, he was quite explicit about the fact that he considered the Amazon to be a Brazilian national resource that could be exploited and it was nobody else's business what
right.
they did. Now, he's not president anymore, but he was extremely popular in Amazonia, even when he lost the election. He won Amazonia.
He won all those states.
Yeah. Considering that local opposition, does that mean that this would be very hard to make into policy?
When you look at the other side of the balance sheet, which are the transfers that would be paid if the price was $25, and we come back to that, you talk about some years, especially the beginning years, things like $15 billion a year flow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money for the Brazilian economy, and especially as it should, if it's all dedicated to what's the poorest part of Brazil, which is the Amazon region. So for that region, those are incredible amounts, you know. So I think that would make the program popular. And if you do the right way, with the right bonding and so on, you could make it very expensive for a next Jair Bolsonaro to try to get out of it.
To try and switch that off. Now, you're quoting $25.
Yeah.
That's way under.
Yeah.
Like you say.
So that's yes, I tell my friends, which are involved in negotiating climate for Brazil, you look, Saudi Arabia produces oil probably at a marginal cost of $5, $7, $10, but they still sell at a market price. So the actual price is going to be a question for negotiations in this case, you know, since there won't be a market. Hard to think of a fully decentralized market for that, but you can negotiate. So when I say 25, I'm not saying that you have to sell everything at 25.
Mm-hmm.
25 is like a minimum price. The maximum price, I suppose, is whatever you think the social cost of carbon is. And in the ETS, the market clears at 100. But there's a lot of my colleagues in economics who say 100 is way too low.
Well, if 100 is way too low, then the benefit of this policy to Brazil, potential benefit, would be enormous.
It could be enormous. And also for the world, because as I said, there's a lot of surplus to be divided there.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that Europeans now value at 100 that you could produce at 25. There's a lot of things to be done there. If you allow me, I want to make an important point. Right now, a European firm that replaces European coal by U.S. liquefied natural gas gets credit for the smaller carbon footprint of natural gas relative to coal. It's even better for the European firm because they don't have to pay for the carbon footprint for the production of natural gas, for the methane that leaks, transportation, and then the cost of regasifying and transporting it again. So they really get a good deal. However, that same European firm cannot buy credits from carbon capture in Brazil. So one type of trade is encouraged, the other one is illegal, which makes absolutely no economic sense. This is like one of the stupidest policies you can propose.
As a lot of this deforestation has been illegal, unsanctioned, might that cause a problem in reversing deforestation?
That's why you need the cash flow to the Amazon. You know, there's going to have to be money dedicated to two things. One, to pay the landowners. And the second is for whatever future production value they lose when they give up their land. And another, to help the people that actually work in the land, that is the farm workers, to be reallocated. But the fact of the matter is that at these low wages those farm workers get, this becomes a relatively inexpensive process.
They might be very happy to receive any offer at all.
They might be very happy to receive a job as a caretaker of the forest or brought to cities and trained for certain activities at higher wages. So all that is computed there.
We've talked about the carbon capture benefits. Are there spillover benefits as well?
So this is not measured by our model because, you know, our model is a quantitative model. We need prices.
Yeah.
But it's very important. Preserving the forest and the kind of reforestation that we imagine, which is natural reforestation, that we know from the data works very well in the Amazon. Trees grow very well back to their original state. This kind of reforestation and the preservation will help us at least preserve species that we have. If a species has disappeared, and probably many, many of the original species of the Amazon have disappeared because I've said there's a lot of rare species. Species that only exist in areas that have been deforested. Those are gone. There's nothing we can do about that. But the reforestation will still be tremendous in terms of preserving biodiversity and spreading biodiversity. That you can do. The second thing is about the rain regime. I've done work on trying to understand how the Amazon alters the rain regime in South America. When you see a typical drop of water in the Amazon, 40% of that has been recycled. It rains, terrain gets very wet, the trees pick up that moisture and put it back in the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And that cloud is traveling southwest. That's the directions of winds in that region of the world. So you're talking about the movement of water, and then it rains again. Now you take off the trees here, what happens to that water? It doesn't get recycled.
We
have dryness in this other area. That system of water transport, which, by the way, certainly true in every tropical forest, but in the Amazon, we quantify it as a fact. When you typically deteriorate the forest in one area, you don't need to reforest it completely. It's enough to get it deteriorated. You deteriorate another piece of the forest because that other piece of the forest equivalent mm-hmm. is not getting enough water. It's a little bit of water each one of them loses. They deteriorate a little bit, but on average, on total, they're going to be like you deforest twice as much. So that says that it's really important to preserve the forest and reforest if you can, because that system would work for reforested areas, which are restored in the way that the Amazon, that's why we like natural deforestation, because that would bring it back completely.
So you've studied the Amazon and the particular economic conditions in Brazil. Can we use your work and apply it to other tropical forests?
We certainly can. The problem is the economic data.
Yeah.
So one of the things we're trying to encourage first are local economists that understand well the data involved. We had Giuliano in our team. You know, you need a local economist that really knows mm-hmm. how this data has been prepared and what was it and so on.
What activity does it represent, not just what the numbers are.
What it represents and so on. And that has been very important for us. And there may be other countries that don't have that kind of data, and that could be a problem. I don't know. It's ironic. This work is really important in areas that have been deforested. So you can really benefit from carbon capture if you destroyed part of your forest. And fortunately, there are countries which haven't done that badly in terms of preserving their forests. But there are other countries, you know, another place which is very deforested is Indonesia.
Yes.
So Indonesia has large areas which could benefit from this. I don't know about economic data in Indonesia. And they use for an entirely different activity, palm oil production. Now, palm oil has two bads associated with it. One is that it really has caused a lot of deforestation, but two is really bad for you.
Yes.
The true shadow price of getting rid of palm oil in Indonesia is probably negative.
José, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The research we have been talking about is joint work by José Schenkman, Giuliano Assuncao, Lars Hansen, and Todd Munson. It's work in progress, so look out for the papers coming soon.
This has been a Vox Talk Crimecenter for Economic Policy Research. If you liked this episode, well, don't forget Vox Talk's Climate Finance, our series that covers issues such as carbon pricing and the economic impact of the loss of natural habitats. You can find all episodes when you subscribe. Do that wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, the economic consequences of banking without branches.